Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 47 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast.
In this episode, I talked to Barry Sorkin from Smoke Barbecue in Chicago, Illinois. I really think you'll like this one. He goes in depth. He's has restaurant. They've had their restaurant for 11 years in Chicago. They were kind of on the forefront of Texas-style barbecue outside of Texas. They definitely have their own spin on things. It's not just like for brisket. It's just not salt and pepper. They actually add up different things. But he's doing an amazing job. The first time I got wind of him was on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. And I make note of that because we talk in depth about it, because it was a big moment for them as a business. And he talks about how much their business grew, what it really meant to them, how they got a lot of people coming in from out of town specifically to visit their restaurant because of the show and the impact of the Food Network and of TV in general. So I think you'll really find that part enjoyable. You'll probably find he comes from an IT background, so he doesn't come from a restaurant or barbecue background, nor do his partner. So that's an interesting aspect. He talks about starting the restaurant, the fears, everything going into to what it takes to have a successful business. And we talk about his second location. It's all over the place, but also very cohesive, if that makes any sense.
If you're liking these, please subscribe. That way you can get all the back episodes. I have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. I also have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. But enjoy this. Good morning.
Morning.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's early for you, isn't it?
It's, what time is it? It's almost 7 o'clock. It's not too bad.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you getting up early to do this, because it's easier for me before we open, obviously.
Oh, definitely. What does a usual day look like for you?
I'm usually here between 7 and 8. It's kind of the only time of day I can get anything done. So, you know, paperwork, whatnot, I help with prep where I have to, kind of make sure we get ready for the day properly. Then 11 o'clock we open. I'm usually out in the dining room, kind of making sure things go smoothly, and you know, if things go well, my partner comes in and takes over for the evening shift. I'm usually out of here by 5 or so.
So, how long have you guys been open? How long have you guys been open now?
We've been open. It'll be 11 years in December.
Oh wow! I'd love to get your background and kind of how you built up. I know roughly. I've heard the story. You were in the tech industry before this. What was your what kind of sparked your whole barbecue adventure?
So I discovered Heckey's when I was in high school, and that was the first time I'd ever had what we'd call a barbecue that was smoked, where the sauce was more than just one-dimensionally sweet. And it kind of sparked my love for barbecue, but it wasn't much later that I actually did some traveling, and I spent some time out in Austin, Texas, and Kansas City, and Memphis, and North and the Carolinas, and really like had, you know, kind of the spectrum of barbecue.
Did you travel for business?
I was traveling for business. Yeah, I was working for this IT consulting company, and it was partially for business. And sometimes I would just take these little side trips and go on these little barbecue excursions. But, you know, that was when I really, like, my love for barbecue became like real and informed. And then, you know, after 8 years in this IT firm that I was working for, I had sort of felt like, it was kind of a career that I fell into. I never quite understood why I was there and why I was doing it. After 8 years, I sort of felt like it was time to do something else. I had sort of had this sort of secret love for the restaurant business from when I waited tables when I was younger, and, sort of always thought I would do something, but never quite knew what. And like, I was learning to barbecue in my backyard. I thought I'd gotten pretty good at it. And, all that was sort of coalescing as I was getting more and more frustrated with my job, and kind of the timing seemed right where it's like, okay, I think Chicago needs a different kind of barbecue place than what it has. I think I know how to do it. And my wife was willing to let me give it a try. It was like all those factors. And, you know, I guess I'd thought about it for a long time, and it got to the point where I was more afraid of not doing it than I was afraid of failing at it.
That makes sense. That impetus right there was like the tipping point almost. So did you, just get some partners together and say, hey, let's get this going? Or is it just as simple as that?
Yeah. I didn't have either the finances or the courage to do it on my own. So I got a couple of partners together, none of whom had any restaurant experience, but all of whom, like, I've known for a very long time and had all spent a lot of time talking about you know, how we were going to get out of the grind. One day we'll do this or one day we'll do that. And we had, you know, probably collectively hundreds of bad ideas for businesses we were going to start one day. And none of them ever went anywhere because they were bad ideas. And when I went to them and said, hey, how about a barbecue place? Almost without hesitation, they all said, yeah, let's do that. And so there are a total of five of us.
Okay.
Who are involved. Three of us run it full time. One of my partners kind of peeled off. He used to run it full time with us, kind of peeled off and went part time, helps us out with bookkeeping and paperwork. And then I've got one partner that's totally silent.
And was it this location that you're at right now, or was that the location that you guys started at, or did you guys start somewhere and then move to a bigger location?
Yeah, no, we've stayed in the same location for the full time. We've recently, actually about a year ago, opened up a sort of half location, I call it. It's a kiosk in a food hall that opened up in Chicago about a year ago. So
I heard something about that.
So we opened up our first sort of attempted down in the middle of downtown. And we actually, you know, it's a smaller menu, smaller footprint, but we do all of our cooking on site, a 20-story building, and they let us put a smoker up on the 20th floor so we can just vent right up through the roof. And we just bring everything up and down through a freight elevator. We cook it every day fresh on site.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah, no, I heard about that, and that's I've never heard anybody actually doing that. That's the city must like you guys a little bit.
Yeah, someone just did a story in one of the local publications around here, calling it the highest elevation smoker in the world, and they began the article by saying, "I don't know if it really is, but go ahead and prove that it isn't."
I don't think anybody could prove that it isn't. I want to ask you just about your trip to. You went to Texas. Did you go with Meathead to Texas?
I've been to obviously Texas several times. At least one of the times I went with Meathead. Meathead and I have been there together a few times actually, because we typically every year go to the National Barbecue Association conference, and it's been in Texas fairly frequently. And Meathead and I are usually there. In fact, that's how I met Meathead.
Okay.
But yes, I spent a lot of time eating barbecue in Texas with Meathead.
And then you went to McKeska's originally for your sausage. Is that where?
Yeah, it's funny. We stopped into McKeska's. I went down there one year, really on a quest to find sausage. That, you know, listen, I've made my sausage my own sausage a number of times, and it's pretty good. But I can't do it as well as these guys that have been doing it for 100 years.
Yeah.
And so I tried some sausage makers in Chicago. None of them could get the flavor profile the way I wanted. None of them could get the texture the way I wanted. And so I went down to Texas. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to have to import it from Texas. And so I went down there. I must have gone to 20 places, and I was going to walk into Louis Mueller's, and we were waiting for them to open. And there's this place, McKeska's, that I had never really heard of. And it was right across the parking lot. I'm like, oh, we'll pop in. They're open. And so I went in there. I was with Meathead, and I was with my rib vendor, Andrew Bloom, from Wichita Packing.
Okay.
And I tried the sausage. And within seconds, I knew that was the one. I said, okay, this is the one I've been looking for. And so I called the owner, Tim, over. And I said, hey, listen, I got this barbecue place in Chicago. We've been open for a few years. I want to put sausage on the menu. Haven't found one in Chicago that I like. I love yours. Is there any way you can get it to Chicago for me? And he looked at me and he goes, you got an airport? And I said, yeah, we got an airport. He goes, we got one too, so I can get it to you. So that's how we did it. For about the first 6 months, he was putting it on a Southwest Airlines freight flight, and I was just going and picking it up once a week at Midway Airport.
Oh, that's so funny.
You know, in the middle of the night and bringing it back here. And that worked for a while, but it was getting a little bit, you know, cumbersome, and you know, flights get delayed whether they got, you know, perishables on them or not. And so I talked to my rib vendor, Wichita Packing, and got them to carry it. So they do the distribution for us now.
That makes it a lot easier, huh?
Yes, it does.
What meat items are you carrying right now? What's on your menu for your restaurant?
So we do what we're most known for is our brisket. Mm-hmm. We do what I'll call a semi Texas style brisket. It's not like the straight Texas salt and pepper, you know, brisket. We like to take everything and put our own spin on it. So we do our brisket. We do a pulled pork. We do baby back ribs. We do St. Louis style spare ribs. We do the Texas sausage. We do a smoked chicken. And that's about it. You know, we try to keep it simple.
That's perfect. And then and sides, of course, and all the sides.
Yeah, we do a handful of sides. Everything is homemade. We don't, you know, we're not pouring anything out of a can onto a plate.
Thankfully.
Kind of what, when we opened, that was sort of our thing. I know it's like you go to these great barbecue places and you love the meat, and then they scoop you, you know, coleslaw out of a box, and it makes me crazy.
Or mac and cheese that's out of a box as well.
Or, yeah, exactly. And so we decided, you know, listen, you're not ever going to make anything where everything on your menu is everybody's favorite, but we want everything to at least be a sincere effort to be great. And, you know, we take a lot of pride in that. And look, you may not like our mac and cheese as much as somebody else's, but, you know, it's our take on it. And this is, you know, and we, at least nobody looks at it and says, you're serving me garbage out of a can. Come on, you know? So, you know, and it's funny, or at least we're trying it. And people, we wondered if anybody was going to notice that. You know, there's always the fear. It's like, you go to all this effort when you're planning a new restaurant, you wonder, is anybody even going to notice that we're going through this trouble to give them, you know, something that was made fresh to order as opposed to something that was, you know, just scooped out of an ice cream scoop out of a can? And they really did. People wrote about it almost instantly after we opened. It was like, you know, it wasn't just the meat. The coleslaw is crispy and fresh, and the mac and cheese tastes like actual cheese. And the, you know, the beans, you can taste that they've been, you know, smoked. It wasn't done with liquid smoke. And so, like, people really noticed all these things. And I got to say that at least, you know, that played at least a, it played a, certainly a significant role in putting this on the map early on.
What was the reception at the very beginning? Were you nervous at the beginning when you first opened?
Oh my God, we were terrified. I mean, geez, you know, we had, listen, I didn't have a lot of money. None of my partners had a lot of money. We had what we had. We put it, we kind of pulled it together. We took out a big SBA loan for the rest. And, you know, even to open up a little barbecue joint, by my standards, it costs a lot of money. You know, it's not something you can do for, you know, 10 or 20,000. That's a big undertaking. And, you know, we had to put our houses on the line and, you know, everything else. So yeah, a number of times a day we said, you know, what if nobody comes? What if nobody cares? You know, what if we do all this? Because, you know,
of course,
is there no barbecue here because nobody's thought to do it? Or is there no barbecue here because Chicagoans aren't really interested in it? And so, like, that weighed on us very, very heavily. And then, of course, let's suppose there was an interest. What if we couldn't pull it off? You know, none of us had any experience. There's a big difference between cooking barbecue in your backyard for 10 or 20 or 15 people versus cooking it for 1,000 people a day, having it available fresh to serve all day long.
Oh, for sure.
All the other complexities that go with running a restaurant. I mean, you know, you tell someone you're opening up a restaurant, 90% of them tell you don't do it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the failure rate is ridiculous. There's a, you know, it's a huge upfront expense. It's a low margin business. There's
not a financial, all these perishable items. And, you know.
Right. Right. There's not a financial planner in the world that's telling their clients to put their money in restaurants.
No,
you know, nobody.
It's everyone's dream, but the reality is pretty tough.
It's everyone's dream and everyone's nightmare.
So the first time I heard about you guys was from Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. What was that like? And how did that affect your business?
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. And it was an enormous, enormous boost. I can't put into words what a boost it was. I mean, we were really busy before that aired. We you know, we were operating at what we thought was our capacity. And that sent us to a completely new level. I mean, that created the need for us to, you know, take over additional space in our building and add a couple more smokers. And, you know, it was one of these things where, like, when they call, it's sort of a funny story. I thought it was a prank call because we had only been open for about 6 months when I got the phone call from them. And so, like, we have people that whose job is to answer the phone. One of them came and got me and said, "Hey, listen, someone's on the phone. They says they want to talk to you about the Food Network." And I was like, "All right." So I took the call, and it was a guy that said, "Hey, listen, my name is David Page, and I produce a show called Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives on the Food Network, and we've gotten a lot of phone calls from people wanting to have you on." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "But can I ask you some questions?" And I said, "Sure." He said, tell me about how you make your stuff. Tell me about your processes. Tell me about what's in your meats, what's in your rubs, what's in your sauces." And I said, okay, hang on a second. You know,
a little suspect.
It was a little suspect. And I said, "Forgive me for sounding paranoid, but, you know, we just opened a few months ago, and, you know, we've kind of made a little bit of a splash here in Chicago, and maybe there's some people that are interested in, you know,
it sounds like that,
getting their hands on recipes and secrets. And so forgive me if it sounds paranoid, but is there any way you can prove to me that this is a legitimate phone call?" And he kind of laughed and he said, no, that's totally understandable. I get it. What do you want me to do to prove it? And then suddenly I felt a little silly. And I'm like, well, I mean, listen, I don't want to make a bigger deal out of it than it is. But, you know, I mean, listen, can you send me an email? And so he sent me an email. So I was at least able to, like, check his email extension. And yeah. It was like, you know, David at Page Productions. And so I looked up Page Productions. And sure enough, they were a company that produced the show Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. I'm like, okay, either this guy went to a trouble of, like,
a lot of
creating,
trouble.
You know, an alias and a website just so he could get my recipes, or this is legit. Mm. I called him back and I said, okay, forgive me, but tell me what you want to know. And we talked for about 20 minutes and he said, listen, we're considering you and a few other restaurants and we'll call you in a week or two and let you know. And so they called and they said, all right, we're coming and here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to have prepared, you know, for that day. Here's how this is going to kind of go down. And once it airs, get ready. And
that's
I said, okay. But I sort of also secretly thought, you know, listen, I mean, more people are going to see this than have seen anything else that we've been on. But most of them aren't here in Chicago. So I just didn't think it was going to be as big of a deal as they were telling me it was. And so they came out here. They did the shoot. It was an incredible, you know, they couldn't have been more gracious and more professional and more respectful of, you know, our operation. They were here for 2 full days and shot something like 10 or 12 hours of footage.
Wow.
You know, that little 8-minute segment. And they did an incredible job producing it. I mean, it came out great. It looked, I thought, really good, you know, as best as they could with what they had to work with. And it aired on a Friday night. I came in that Saturday morning, and our voicemail was full.
Really?
I had something like 100 emails in my inbox of people saw you on the show. Can you ship across the country? Can you do this? Can you do that?
Whoa.
And I was completely overwhelmed. And we opened at 11 o'clock in the morning. By about 10, there was like a cluster of people that had started to form outside of our front door. And by 10:30, there was a line around the side of the building. And I thought, oh my God. What have we done? And it was insane. We opened at 11 o'clock and people were, you know, we kind of regulate the pace a little bit here because we have to. But the line was, you know, a block long, and we were out of food by 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
And usually you'd sell out by when? You'd sell out by 6 or 7?
7, 8 o'clock. I mean, it depended on the day a little bit. We only at the time had one, you know, smoker. And so we were filling it to capacity. And, you know, usually we would sell out of a few things. Sometimes we'd have something left, but we were out of coleslaw. We were out of mac and cheese. We were out of beans. There was nothing we had left to sell. It's like, we were basically inviting people in and saying, hey, we're happy to order pizza if you want to hang out here. But I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, we had grown accustomed to apologizing to people for that and explaining it to them. But, you know, you've been to every barbecue place there is to go to, but in Chicago, people weren't used to this concept that a barbecue place could be out of food. You know, you go down to Texas or Memphis or Kansas City, it's like part of the culture. You know, you get there earlier, you take your chances they're going to be out of something. But here, people weren't really used to it because we didn't have this kind of barbecue here. So people would show up at 6 o'clock in the evening and say, what do you mean you're out of food? You're a restaurant. Order,
exactly.
Order more.
No,
what's wrong with
that? That's common, you know, for Los Angeles too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Sure it is. And so we spent a lot of time just sort of explaining that to people. And we had, you know, listen, I've got a choice. I can either find a way to cook barbecue faster and make it not as good, or I can stand here and apologize to you and say, hey, we're working on building more capacity and we hope you'll come back and try us a little earlier next time.
Well, let's do it. And did that last for a while?
Well, we were open for probably 2 years before we were able to take over more space in the building and add another smoker. And so, yeah, we did this for a really long time. And to be honest, it probably became part of the cachet. You know, it's like, ooh, you got to get there early.
Which is cool. Yeah,
that's
great.
It became part of the narrative in like stories that were written about us and in reviews. You know, people would write Yelp reviews and they'd say, this place is great. Try the brisket. Oh, and get there early.
That's
kind of became part of it. Yeah, it turned out great, but it was painful and it was terrifying. And it was, you know, it's like, listen, you've got a barrage of people coming at you. You have to tell all of them that you can't serve them any food. You know, it's overwhelming and daunting.
And it became probably a destination too for people, from travelers that come from out of town.
That was the other thing. Yeah. I mean, after the Food Network aired, we noticed that whereas, when travel holidays came along, we used to slow down and suddenly we would get busier because for every one person that was traveling out of Chicago, 15 are traveling into Chicago. So, we would find that those holiday weekends became much, much busier for us.
And
even today, I mean, it's been 10 years since that originally aired. They still rerun it from time to time and we still feel it. It's amazing that even 10 years, it's a gift that keeps on giving. So I can't say enough good things about, Guy Fieri, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives in the Food Network.
So if you're a restaurant watching this and you've gotten that call, you should say yes to have them come.
Man, I will say absolutely unequivocally yes. And to be honest with you, like when they told us what it was going to take to shoot this thing, we almost said no, because it was like, we were at the time, like I said, we felt like we were operating at capacity. And I thought, okay, so I'm going to have like three cameramen, a director, a producer, guy, like in my kitchen, like during a shift while we're trying to operate. I'm like, I'm not sure we can pull this off without service suffering. And so we actually had a debate about whether we should say yes or not. And of course, we made the right decision. But I mean, I would say to people, you can't understate the potential impact.
Yeah, the power of the Food Network and the power of that show is beyond what people realize. I know some restaurants that have turned it down.
Is that right?
Not knowing, not really realizing. Because they do shut, I think nowadays they shut the restaurant down for a day or two. So.
That's what I heard. They didn't do that for us, but I heard that they were asking to do that more recently. I mean, there are some shows that I would turn down. I mean, there was a show for a while called The Health Inspectors.
I don't know that one.
Oh, my God. All I could think is, why would anybody agree to be on? And so the premise was these pseudo health inspectors would go in and they would find all of these violations in this restaurant, and then some, TV personality, it wasn't Robert Irvine, but it was somebody like that, would come in and tell these restaurateurs what morons they were and show them all the stupid things they're doing and yell at them for a while, and then, of course, help them fix it. And then at the end of the show, the health inspector would come back and everything was fixed. But gee, good God almighty. I mean,
it's already stressful enough to have the help.
Yeah. I mean, of course, these were not real health inspectors. They were like show. But it's like, why on earth would you want to publicly
expose
on national television, expose all of the worst, horrible things that you do? Even if the premise of the show is that you're going to fix them by the end of the show, I don't know. If you're doing stuff like that, odds are those bad habits are going to come back.
Yeah, a lot of those shows, I think when I see them, it's usually the end of the restaurant's era. It's kind of almost.
Yes. It's true. There was a Chicago restaurant that I saw on this show, and about 6 months later, they closed. So you're probably right.
That's so crazy. I've never heard of that before. So that's I'm going to search and find that. I'm sure on YouTube there's some old episodes.
I'm sure. I don't know if the show is still on the air, but it was on for a while.
Oh, that's so crazy. So how have things changed since the beginning? Do you feel a lot more comfortable? I guess you've expanded to a second location. What's the future for Smoke?
I don't know. We talk about it pretty regularly about what's next for Huds. I mean, we're pretty protective of what we've built here, and we know how easy it is to fall into the expansion trap where it's like you see the dollar signs, but those dollar signs are predicated on the quality of what you're putting out.
For sure.
It's not a given that you can take your brand and your name and your logo and open up in 37 places and they're all going to have the same reputation as the first. It's possible to do that, but I think you have to, you have to be a little skeptical of a lot of these things. And so we have been, and we've been approached countless times, and, which is not in any way to suggest that we're closed off to the idea, but we want to make sure that if we expand, we do it in a way where we can protect what we've built, because this place, this location, this spot is, that's always going to be our baby. And, we don't want to put the brand at risk. We don't want to put the business at risk. And it would, if for no other reason, it would break our hearts to see this thing turn into
that'd be awful.
Run of the mill place. And so so the future, I don't know. But we're pretty protective of what we have here. And if we expand, it will only be because we find a way to do it in a way that is sensible and not incredibly risky.
And you guys have definitely, you guys were kind of the first in the forefront of Chicago barbecue changing. Barbecue has changed in Chicago now. There's a lot more restaurants. Yeah. And some of them have made it, some of them haven't made it. But it's that's amazing that you guys have made it for 10 years for even being barbecue or any restaurant.
Yeah, well, thanks. I appreciate that. We thank our lucky stars every day. And, you know, we get asked frequently about changes, as you just did. And the truth is we haven't changed much. We've added a couple things to our menu, but by and large, we haven't changed anything. We still operate the same way. You know, my role has changed a little bit. It's evolved. You know, when we opened, I was, you know, trimming the brisket, rubbing the meat, smoking it, slicing it. Now, you know, I train people to do that, and I oversee that, and I make sure it's done properly, but I don't, you know, do it on a daily basis. Still times where I need to jump in and help out, train somebody, correct some behavior, or fill in for someone who didn't show up or called off. But, you know, by and large, you know, things haven't changed that much around.
Whenever anybody asks me about where they should go in Chicago, you're the first spot I tell them to go to.
Well, thank you. I'm grateful. And I know we've had people that have come in here and said you've sent them. So I
respect what you've done, and I'm definitely proud of you guys, because it's a long history, and I just still can't believe it. That the whole story about the Dadgers Drive-Ins and Dives, that blows me away that the response is so, and I've heard that from other people, but it still blows me away that how much power that has.
I think more than other kinds of food, barbecue on television makes people want to go out and eat barbecue.
True.
You know, I just don't see that kind of response to lasagna. I just don't see that kind of response to, like, other guys. Mike Mills famously said, you know, the spaghetti people don't do this. But, you know, I think barbecue, for whatever reason. Yeah.
There's something about it. But thank you again for your time, and I appreciate it. I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your concluding us and for what you do. I mean, listen, you're helping spread the gospel, and you're doing a hell of a job with it. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
I love it. It's my passion, and I'll definitely stop in the next time in. I'll see you again.
Well, make sure you give me some advance notice. I'll make sure to be here. We can meet without the technology getting in the way.
That'd be perfect. Well, have a great day. And am I seeing cars go by, or am I seeing, it looks like in the background, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you're right. Right. So that's our east-facing window. And that's Pulaski Road, so you're seeing some traffic.
Oh, very cool. All right, so we'll have a great day.
All right, thanks, Kevin.